You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
You know, when you're out there and you're by yourself, you're making your own decisions on how you're going to manipulate, what tree you're going to sit at. Do you call now? Do you wait? How much should you call? How far away do you think that bird is? You can make those decisions and you can just be happy with it because, you know what, it's your hunt, it's your choice, and that's kind of what's nice about just being out in the outdoors is, you know, make some of your own choices and, hey, you know, learn from your experience. Maybe this setup didn't work, but you're going to learn something every time you go out.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here to share with you the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world, mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, raising, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Brocky Italiano. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Who's excited about turkey season? Well, I can't hear your response, but this girl right here is. And as we all know, turkeys are dicks. So I was super stoked to get a bunch of pointers from my guest today. Linda Hinz is a turkey hunting enthusiast from Wisconsin. She's been pursuing gobblers for over 20 years and heavily involved with the National Wild Turkey Federation Women in the Outdoors program, where she's been hosting an annual three-day educational event for the past 20 years. If you're planning to turkey hunt this spring, you need to listen to this episode. Linda shares a ton of knowledge from her 20-plus years of experience, and if you aren't already a Patreon patron, be sure to sign up because Linda is joining us live on Thursday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time for a Beyond the Podcast session to teach us the basics of turkey calling. I am super stoked about that. And as always, I donate 5% from Patreon to the AKC Canine Health Foundation and another 5% to the conservation organization. Each guest I have on a Beyond the Podcast session designates which organization they'd like me to donate that money to. Heck, even if you aren't planning on turkey hunting this spring, pop in because I can guarantee you it's going to be a good time. All right, let's get after it. This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan. What makes a great bird dog is genetics, training, and nutrition, and that's why I trust and feed Purina Pro Plan. With over 500 nutritionists, veterinarians, and scientists on staff, Pro Plan delivers a full spectrum of performance and specialized dog food formulas to help bird dogs like yours excel at every stage of life. Purina supports us, the breeders, owners and trainers, the events we compete in, our national breed clubs, canine health research, and our committed partners to conservation groups such as Pheasants Forever, Rough Grouse Society, and Ducks Unlimited. 95 out of the top 100 dogs are fueled by the advanced nutrition of Purina Pro Plan. This episode is also presented by Boss Shot Shells. Copper-plated bismuth Boss provides a better, more effective non-lead option than steel and are safe to use in Grandpa's gun. Available in 10, 12, 16, 20, 28-gauge, and 410, direct-to-consumer pricing and cases shipped right to your door. Shoot Boss, pattern your shotgun to make more clean and ethical shots, reduce crippling, and remove lead from the uplands, wetlands, and all lands. Find out more at BossShotShells.com. A big shout out to the people and the partners that are helping me to keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation, and another 5% goes to conservation. Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for your dog's travel to and from your next adventure. My favorite is the G3 kennel, which has a recessed handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed panel latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I have to leave dogs in my truck when I stop for fuel. An added bonus is the drain hole in the back, which makes cleaning a breeze when my dog has been run hard and put away wet. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that make shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer seasoned hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also buy Big Frig roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers, and my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/bigfrig to view the wide array of sizes and colors available. There's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. Good morning, Linda. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Courtney. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks for coming on. So I want you to kick us off today before we get into all the awesome things that you've been doing over the last 20 years. But let's get an idea of how that came about and where you started. Where are you coming to us from?
All right. So I'm Linda Hinz. I'm from Baraboo, Wisconsin. We're just north of Madison, about an hour. I'm married, have two grown children. Started turkey hunting probably 20 years ago. My husband started me turkey hunting. He said, gosh, you're going to love this, because he knew that I love to bow hunt and be outdoors. And so he encouraged me to go. And I was, at first I was like, well, I'm not really that interested, but, I went with him, and sure enough, boy, I was hooked after the first day of going out and listening to the birds in the trees and seeing how that you could talk to them and they talk to you. It was really exciting. And my son and daughter have both turkey hunted. My son's a fanatic, kind of like the rest of us. We all get into mentoring other hunters. And otherwise at home, we have a couple German Shorthair pointers, one that's 12 and the other 6. And my son also just got a German Shorthair puppy, so we babysit him as well. We enjoy doing things, you know, deer hunting, pheasant hunting. We've gone elk hunting, antelope, mule deer. We enjoy fishing. Recently, my husband and I retired, so this will be our first year after COVID that we're able to get out and do more.
How long have you had that breed, and why the short hair?
Well, my husband grew up having short hairs. And when we got married, my daughter had a little Cocker Spaniel. We did that for a little while, but we just ventured back because we wanted to get into pheasant hunting again. And those dogs are very good. They're great family dogs. And so it was kind of a no-brainer to get back into having German Shorthairs.
You are really active with the National Wild Turkey Federation's Women in the Outdoors program. And from what I understand, I think they were one of the first conservation organizations that had a women's program installed. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, I do. Back in 1997, Wisconsin happened to be one of the states that did a pilot program for this Women in the Outdoors to introduce more women to outdoor activities, knowing that it was a dynamic that not a lot of women were out there and we wanted to reach more. So it started in Wisconsin. I heard about it at a local banquet. And I thought, gosh, I would really love to go to that, because at the time I had grown up with my three brothers and my dad, who all took me hunting. We hunted for food, you know, it supplied our needs as a growing family. And I was really excited to be able to share that with other people and find other women with similar interest. So I went to that first event and, you know, it was everything I wanted. I met some great people there. And so I joined the committee that first year. We've been holding 3-day events ever since. There's also been people on that committee, which is kind of a small group of women, probably 10 to 15 ladies, who are spread out throughout Wisconsin, who I've now known for 20 years, who are some of the best friends you could ever ask for, that I've met through the organization. Our event reaches out, we move it around to different areas of the state like every couple years, and we're able to reach a wider group of people. Usually we started off having maybe 40 to 50 people, and now, depending on the camps that we're at, it depends on how many people we can accommodate. I think the most that we've had is probably like 180 plus our instructors.
That's incredible.
Over the years, we've offered so many different types of classes because we want to just bring people in and teach them things that maybe they haven't been exposed to. Some of the classes would be like all your shooting sports, for trap shooting and pistols and five stand, archery. We'll work in like canning food, rock climbing, fishing, hunting, survival skills, high and low ropes, outdoor cooking, sausage making. We do personal protection, anything that we think we can get people to come back year after year, or show them something new that they could try.
That is really
neat. We also throw in some crafts, because we found that, you know, if it's your first time and you're not a hunter or you're not very outdoorsy, you might come in signing up for a class that's a craft class that might have something to do with the outdoors. We might be using outdoor products. And maybe that year you just took crafts. And the next year you're like, you know, I would really like to not be afraid of guns. So maybe they'll take a handgun class or a rifle class or concealed carry, whatever it might be. And we can kind of see people progress and try something new, and maybe those people end up being hunters in the end. Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing a brochure for a women's event when I lived in Wisconsin a couple years ago, and it was one of the descriptions was backing up a trailer.
You betcha, we do that.
Was that yours? Was that?
It could have very well been.
I just thought that is so unique, so realistic. I loved it.
Yeah. So our classes, what we'll do is we'll start on a Friday afternoon when people come to register, and that Friday is more of a get to know you. Our Saturday consists of a class in the morning and a class in the afternoon. They're usually 3 hours long. We found that gives people time to get back and forth to different classes. and also gives the instructors plenty of time to have hands-on and personal contact. Most of our classes have, let's say 5 to 15 people in them. So they're small, they're personal. There's no pressure. It's okay to be uncomfortable doing something or not be great at it and not be judged for it. Mm-hmm. So it's not like maybe a husband or a friend who's really wants you to do something and you feel like they're going to be judging you because you're not any good at it or you don't understand what they're trying to ask you to do or you're afraid to ask the questions. I think our event gives you the opportunity for it to not be judgmental. The women help each other accomplish some of those goals. Let's say it's rock climbing and you've never done it and you have to trust that somebody's going to hold you if you fall or our high and low ropes courses where you're challenging yourself to do something different and you need the support of other people. This event kind of helps build that character and confidence that women need today.
Right. Where is it going to be held this year?
This year, it's going to be in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Which is in the northern part of Wisconsin, in August, the weekend of the 20th.
Okay. And do those fill up relatively quickly when you get an announcement out or open up enrollment for it?
Yes. We have not had to turn people away yet.
Okay.
So that's great news. We've had people from all over the U.S. Join us, usually for maybe they're coming to spend the weekend with a friend or an aunt. We see a lot of return people. Now we're seeing mother-daughter teams, sisters or a group of friends that come together kind of as a women's getaway weekend. So it's really, it's cool to see the diversity of the women. We start at like age 13.
Okay.
And we've had participants all the way up until they're 80.
That's awesome. Yeah, that would be a nice little mother-daughter getaway weekend. And I didn't realize that you had added so much in there besides just the turkey hunting. So
definitely. And the other thing that's kind of interesting, I guess, about introducing hunting is since it's the National Turkey Federation, we think it's very important to offer turkey hunting. And if someone has never hunted before, it's hard for them to take that next step of, well, I don't know anyone. How do I get involved in that? So years ago, our local chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation, which is called the Glacier Valley Gobblers, we started hosting a Learn to Hunt program. And at the time that we started, it was mostly for youth. You know, we'd take kids that maybe their parents didn't know how to hunt or that were interested in learning. And after we had our women's event, some of the same people hosted the Learn to Hunt. And we got thinking, well, why not invite some of the ladies who might be interested in learning to hunt to come to the Learn to Hunt? Mm-hmm. So we kind of married the two together. So now we let people sign up at our 3-day event in August. And if they're interested in learning to hunt, then we'll take them the next spring out turkey hunting. It's a program with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And they provide us with like free tags for these participants. And we host it before the actual turkey season is open. So it's kind of like a youth hunt or whatever, mm-hmm. where it's special. So we can take them out after we've done hours of education. So we'll start on a Friday and do some education. We make sure that they shoot guns and pattern those shotguns ahead of time and that they're comfortable. We match them up with a mentor. And there's usually 20 people or so in our program who will take people out. And then we, you know, we cook them dinner, and the next day we take them turkey hunting all day Saturday. And everybody comes in for lunch, and some of them might have bagged a bird. And so we check those out and show them how to field dress them and how to prepare that then to take home and prepare for a meal. And then Sunday, we also take them hunting until lunchtime. So it's a great opportunity for us to share our knowledge with them and kind of get them started.
And that's neat that the state, you know, that they have this program to be able to allow that before season opens. Cause I think
it's very nice. Sometimes we run into some really inclement weather, Wisconsin, you just never know. We can have snow or ice or, you know,
right. Right.
Is just this hunt through whatever you get?
Is it the people that come to that, are they always all women?
The Learn to Hunt? No, we've had some men, lots of kids. Now it also is our UW system has a education class that people are taking for sustainability, kind of the field to fork. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to get adults from that program who are also interested in coming to turkey hunts. So, yep, we're not prejudiced. We'll take men, women, and kids.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Really cool. And there's about 20 people that you get for that. Is that limited number?
Well, there's Learn to Hunts in different areas of the state. Different chapters of the National Wildlife Turkey Federation will host these. So we can give those names out to like our regional person who's in charge of Learn to Hunts, and we can maybe get them somewhere closer to where they live in the state.
Mm-hmm. You're so intentional with this and the mentoring involved with not only the turkey hunting, but just getting people outdoors and these experiences. Why is that so important to you?
Well, you know, today's day and age, there's so much negativity in, you know, everything from politics to people who don't agree with other people and always having to voice their opinions, everything from gun control to, you know, there's so many things that are there that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. I think it's all about our attitudes. I think as hunters, and I think you'd probably agree that conservation, it's our money that we're putting in that helps take care of the wildlife and keeps a balance. It's paid for by the hunters. Wildlife is very important to us. It's not just about going out and killing. It's about being part of the camaraderie with people that you go with. It's the companionship. It's a challenge for you personally, as far as, you know, like I said before, you know, maybe you've started with a craft and all of a sudden you learned how to shoot a gun and now you want to take it to the next step. How do you test yourself? So mentoring, I've seen so many things change over the years. There's a couple girls on our committee who are these people who did not start off hunting or shooting archery, or that they have grown so much through the program that both of them challenge themselves to get a turkey. And they learned so much, but they hunted for 10 years before they ever shot their first bird. One of them wanted to do it on her own, and she did. She kept learning kind of by school of hard knocks. But eventually things fell together for her. And the other one had other people helping her, and it just wasn't, she wasn't able to close the deal, but And, you know, not that they had 40 hours a season to get out there, but sometimes it takes a long time. I mean, you have to be patient and have a passion to get out there and want to achieve a goal.
And skill. I mean, there's a good amount of skill that needs to bring it all together as well. I've been struggling with turkey calling for years.
Yeah, well, it's hard. I mean, it can be hard, you know, and even especially if you're on your own, being able to, you know, use a call with your hands and get your gun up and try to determine how far your turkey is from you and
not be spotted.
Right. And not move. Mm-hmm. It can be very challenging.
Right. In the 20 years that you've been holding that event, what has changed the most from, I mean, besides the numbers, because that's increased so much, but what do you think has changed from then till now?
I think it's the women who come, the openness to learn. And take that next step. One of the things that I think is really special about the event is the outcome that you weren't expecting, right? We're hoping that people come and learn something and have a great fun weekend. But it's the unexpected things. One year I had someone come up to me the year after. We had had a conversation. And she said, you know, I did a ropes course and I have been so empowered by the women that I attended with and that I got to know that it gave me so much more confidence. She said, I didn't say anything last year, but I was in an abusive relationship. And she said, and I had so much fear to get out of it. And that next year she came back and she came up to me and she said, I really want to thank you because attending this event gave me the ability to get out of that relationship. And I thought, well, wow, that was something very unexpected.
Right.
That you wouldn't think that a weekend like this is, mm-hmm. but, so that was kind of cool.
That is. And I mean, I think some of that even plays into why there are so many women that seek events like this, whether it's the Learn to Hunt or, you know, the Becoming an Outdoors Woman, just having groups of women get together and do something like this, that's different. I think they just enjoy that kind of that camaraderie, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. And through the NWTF, there also is other programs, a program for youth, which is called Jake's. Mm-hmm. There's Wheeling Sportsmen. There's banquets that you can attend. So there's lots of different things that people can get involved in through the National Wild Turkey Federation.
Hold up just one second so I can tell you about our new launch of the Bird Dog E Academy. William and I have designed a school for bird dog owners and breeders, like legit classes, where a new module drops every week. You get a checklist, weekly assessments, and follow along with videos of several different dogs. After going through the beta phase with students, we have launched the Reliable Retrieve course. This course follows the progress and struggles of four different dogs with four different personalities. This is a little to no pressure course. You will learn to read your dog and decide which option is best for them. The best and most unique part of this course that no other online dog training course has ever offered is you will get 100% support. Weekly live Q&A sessions, a private Facebook group, for you to ask questions, post videos of what you and your dog are working through, and watch other people and their dogs to help you become a better overall trainer yourself.
This is a big commitment for a pro trainer, and also the reason that this particular course will only be offered 3 times a year and is limited to only 50 people. We start the Reliable Retrieve on Monday, April 19th, so head over to birddogeacademy.com to register. I mean, we're getting right into turkey hunting here, so you're getting all prepared for that right now, I'm guessing. What are some things you're doing to get ready for it?
Oh, you bet. So some of the things that right now is important for me is doing some pre-scouting. So I hunt quite a few little different areas. We probably have 5 or 6 private places that we can hunt, which are only maybe 40 acres or less. So if there's no birds there, we just go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a run and gun, but it's not, it's more because of need. I mean, you can either sit in one spot all day and wait and see if one happens to come by, or you just go to an area and find one to work.
Okay.
So pre-scouting, you have to go out in the woods and you have to look for feathers on the ground, or you have to listen in the trees in the morning just to see, are there turkeys here? Is this an area that holds turkeys? You need to practice your calling. You have to check in with landowners to see if, you know, if it's the same landowner, if you have permission, maybe make them some cookies to thank them. you also have to check into licensing. What's different? Make sure that you got your tag ahead of time. If you're hunting any public land, you have to make sure that it's still open. You also have to get your equipment ready, right? You have to take that gun out and you have to pattern it. You shoot it at 20 yards, 30 yards, 40 yards, just to make sure that your gun is shooting where you expect it and to know what a safe distance is that you can be successful with that shot so that you're not injuring animals.
Right. How many shots are you taking when you're patterning? I'm like, these turkey loads are some expensive dudes. So
They are. And some shots work better in some guns than others. So, you know, I will usually start off at a 20-yard shot. And if I'm good there, I would move it out to 30. And what I'm looking for is when you're aiming at the turkey, you're kind of aiming where their feathers meet their head. So at their bottom, at base of their neck. And you want the turkey to stretch his head up. So then you have a larger target, rather than like if they're in full strut, you've seen them in full strut. You just want to have a bigger target. Mm-hmm. And you want at least like 10 BBs that you can see within that kill zone to be successful. So then you'd want to back it up to 30 yards, take that same shot. And I would probably go at 40 yards. If you're new, and it also depends on the type of gun you're using, right? And the type of shot. If you're using a 20 gauge, your range may only be 30 yards. If you're using a 12 gauge, it's probably 40 yards. Once you know your gun, so my gun I know can easily shoot 40 yards. So this year, as long as I take it out and I set it up at 40 yards and I'm on, I really don't have to pattern anymore. Okay. But if you're new to turkey hunting, I would definitely take those additional steps just to make sure that you're comfortable. And also just the shooting several times will get you more familiar with your weapon, and make you more confident when you're actually going to take a shot.
So, Linda, you have a 12 gauge?
I do.
And what choker are you using?
Oh, it's an extra, extra, extra full choke.
I haven't seen that option.
Yeah. I think the brand is a Carlson.
Okay. Okay. Full choke.
Yeah.
Extra full.
Extra full.
Are you hunting on private and public land, or do you hunt
yes.
just okay?
Yes.
So,
yes.
What kind
We're
of
bounce around between different ones?
what do you change up between that? Like safety precautions, your setup, sure. Does any of that change?
It definitely does. Okay. If I go to a piece of public land and there's another vehicle there, I don't hunt it. I go away and maybe come back later in the day. Unless it happens to be, you know, a really large area that there's multiple parking spots that you can kind of think that you might know where that other hunter is. But I kind of respect other people that if they got there first, I shouldn't kind of butt in on their hunt. I've had it happen to me and it's not a good feeling. You know, I've even talked to people on the road and said, I'm going to be hunting in this area. So if, you know, if they stayed away from that area, then I'd be good. But 10 minutes later, they walk right past you. Hmm. I think that's hunter ethics to me is giving people a little bit of space, especially with turkey hunting. You want to make sure that when you're out there, especially on public land, that you don't, and this is even if you're hiking, right? If you're hiking and it's turkey season, don't be wearing red, white, and blue because that's the colors of the turkey's head can change those colors. You always want to make sure that you identify it as a turkey. If you hear about accidents that happen turkey hunting, it is generally someone who's not following that rule. You have to be able to identify that it's a tom turkey with a beard before you're pulling the trigger, at least in Wisconsin in the spring. Bearded hens are also legal, mm-hmm. but that's probably only a 1 in 10 chance. But it's very important for you to go full camo. So if you're out in the woods and you're full camo and you're making calls like a turkey, you have to expect that there could be another hunter that is thinking that you really are. If you're using decoys, you want to make sure that you don't set them like on a field. Let's say you're at the edge of a field and you put your decoys on the field, that they're not directly in front of you, you know, that someone else could think about it when you're setting up, that someone else could approach and mistakenly shoot at the decoy and shoot you.
Gosh, right. Right. Where are your decoys? How far do you set them out from where you're sitting?
Yeah. So decoys are something that's kind of a personal preference. I guess I might use a decoy more in the early part of the season than in a later part of the season. Jake, which is a young gobbler, a first year gobbler, which only has a beard about 2 inches. They are usually grouped together. So you might see a bunch of Jakes together in the spring. And they might even beat up on a tom turkey. So it you kind of have to gauge your region and what's happening in that flock. Some tom turkeys will always come into it like a Jake decoy and try to beat it up. But I've also seen where tom turkeys have been beaten up by a whole group of Jakes. So it really just depends on if you want to take the risk that that turkey comes out and he's a subordinate tom. He might not come into a tom decoy, but he certainly would probably come into a Jake decoy.
Are you finding a difference early season to late season with that behavior?
Yes. I think they kind of say that turkeys have a brain the size of a pea, mm-hmm. but I would say let's say you had 3 toms come in the first season to a group of hunters and they shot a bird. Those other tom turkeys that were with it seem to remember a little bit about that experience. So they might not come to that same type of setup again. So you kind of have to either mix it up or, you know, you might get lucky and same thing will happen the second day, but it's kind of a judgment call is if you want to use decoys or not. I've had turkeys that popped out, looked at those decoys and ran the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always, it's not always successful just because you put a decoy out.
And I don't know the regulations, how much it varies from state to state. So I think people will have to check into that before they head out. But identification wise, you know, some states do allow hens in the fall,
typically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in the spring, obviously, this is their breeding season. So that's actually why you can call in the spring. And it's not natural for a tom turkey to gobble and then go to or for a hen to call and for the tom to go to the hen. Normally the tom gobbles and the hens go to the tom to be bred. So what we're trying to do when we call them is something that's unnatural to the turkeys, is to get them to come to us.
So with that, what kind of calls are you using?
Well, I typically stick to like a box call.
Okay.
Or a slate call. I find my box call is used more often as I, on a windy day. So mm-hmm. when I want to reach out and call louder, and I'll back off to that slate call as they get closer. I have tried mouth calls. I would probably scare more turkeys away by trying a mouth call. But I don't find that I've needed to learn. So I've kind of just stuck to what I know and what works for me, which is kind of the cool thing about hunting in general is, you know, when you're out there and you're by yourself, you're making your own decisions on how you're going to manipulate, what tree you're going to sit at. Do you call now? Do you wait? How much should you call? How far away do you think that bird is? You can make those decisions and you can just be happy with it because, you know what? It's your hunt. It's your choice. And that's kind of what's nice about just being out in the outdoors is, you know, make some of your own choices and, hey, you know, learn from your experience. Maybe this setup didn't work, but you're going to learn something every time you go out. Mm-hmm.
Right. Are you using, when you're calling, are you using chirps, yelps, purrs? What do you, give us a little bit of your personal strategy and what you found works.
Yeah, so I think the thing to think about when you're learning to call is just get down some of the things that are basics to them, right? Turkeys cluck, they put, they cut, they purr, they'll do a kiki. And they'll also gobble. Most hen turkeys walk around just purring and making little clucks and yelps throughout the day, especially in the springtime. They don't have to be real loud. But I think what's important is knowing or, you know, set yourself up that you watch some videos and listen to actual turkeys to find out what the cadence is. Because when you call, you want to be like the yelp, yelp, yelp. There's a certain cadence that you want to repeat to actually sound like a turkey. Putting is more of an alarm call. So you don't necessarily want to put at a turkey unless you want to tell them that you're alarming them to something else. You have to remember that turkeys are pretty low on the food chain. Something's always trying to eat them. So they're wary. Their eyesight is tremendous. They don't smell. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But they can see any type of little movement So you have to be very careful that way. I guess when you've got birds roosted and they're still up in the trees in the morning, you don't want to call a whole lot to those birds that are roosted. You might want to just do a little purrs or a couple clucks or just something to let them know that you're there. Some people use like a wing or a loud noise to sound like a fly down. There is a fly down cackle that you could learn to do. But usually if you're out there, you'll want to just wait until they come off the roost and then not pressure them too much. The first thing that they're going to do is if they're roosted with hens, is they'll usually do the breeding of the hens that are with them. So you might have to, it might be an hour or two before they're actually ready to go looking for some other hens.
So that's not something that's on their mind typically first thing in the morning when they're coming off the roost?
Usually they'll try to find like a strep zone.
Okay.
Sometimes it's in where they roost. And other times it's, you know, especially in the springtime of the year and it's a sunny morning and it's bright. They like to go to like, to, if you're on a field, let's say, then there's a knob or a higher point. They'll like to stand up there, the gobblers, and they'll fan those turkeys up, fan their feathers out and show off for all the females. And that's how they're, you know, attracting them. And so if you can find where they're doing that through your scouting, that would be a great place to put yourself in a position of, you know, where they're going after they come off the roost.
Mm-hmm. My friends held a little just backyard fun clinic the other night, and the president of the NWTF chapter here put on a demonstration for us on using the diaphragm calls. Mm-hmm. And he made the different, there were three different reads he handed out to us. And that was the first time I've ever done the mouth calls. And it was very cool. It was challenging. I'm going to get on and practice watching some YouTube videos.
Yeah, but, you definitely have to.
Yeah. But that purr, I mean, that's the most difficult thing to do with the mouth call.
Definitely.
But I think on that slate, you can nail that purr pretty well.
You're
if
right.
You know how it sounds.
Definitely. Yeah.
Let's see. So you're using the box call and the slate. Are you transitioning that in the same time frame? Are you going between the two or are you changing that out?
Yeah. So I usually carry like four slates with me because they all sound a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And if I don't hear anything from one slate, I might switch and try a different slate and striker because sometimes it's my Primos power crystal. I'll hit that thing and they slam on it and, you know, that's the one that they like. And you might switch to a different one and they won't respond to it. So you give them what they're asking for or that they're responding to. But I think you also want to make sure you don't overcall, because if you're overcalling, you might have a hen come in because she's like, oh, that's where that tom is. And she'll cut you off and go to him and take him away. And overcalling can also, you know, he's just thinking you're just making noise and he doesn't have to come. I would rather have them be interested in going, that lady's over there. I wonder why she's not coming to see me. I think I'll go check her out. I would rather try to entice them to come to me than to overcall and kind of, you know, try to force their hand.
Yeah. So overcalling. So how often are you calling?
Well, I guess it all depends on the scenario. You know, if I hear If I get to it, let's do a scenario, I guess. If I get to a property and I call, well, let's step back for a second. So just because you got to a property, maybe you don't want the turkey. Maybe you're not really at a point where you're going to sit down. You just want to see if there's something out there. You could use a locator call, which is, you know, it could be an elk call. It could be a crow call. It kind of depends on the type of area that you are or what you have. It could be a duck call. Just a loud noise will shock gobble sometimes into just gobbling.
Okay.
And once you've heard where they gobbled from, then you can determine how far away they are, right? If they're 200 yards away, I wouldn't call again. I'd start walking and cut that distance in half. And then I might call again and see if that bird moved or if he'll respond again. That way I'm not going to get too close, because if he sees you coming, he won't answer and he'll just be gone. But keep moving closer, because if you can get within 100 yards and then maybe do your setup or sit down and prepare yourself for actually trying to get the bird to come in, you just kind of have to gauge that.
About how much time do you have from 100 yards away that he's going to be 30 yards away?
That really varies. Some turkeys will circle you. You know, you're expecting them to come right in. I've had people who, let's say they put a decoy out, right? And they're expecting that Tom is going to come out and walk over to that decoy, but they hear him coming behind them, right? It's gobbling, gobbling. Instead of turning around and facing the gobble, they just keep their gun pointed to the field or to where their decoy is, because they presume that turkey is going to come out and that's where they're going to shoot him, is at the decoy. Well, that might be how it is on TV shows that you watch, or, you know, hunting shows that you watch. But if you point to the gobble all the time, you're kind of following where he's going, and it might come up. You might shoot that bird before it ever comes to the field. It might depend on what time of the season it is, if it's really green out or if it's early in the season where that foliage hasn't come out. You might not be able to see it. So you kind of just have to gauge the scenario to how you can be successful.
Okay. And so I've been hunting by myself, turkey hunting, I think it's been like 6 or 7 years now. I've never had the opportunity to sit in a blind with somebody that's really good at calling, and I hope I can do that sometime in the future. But the more I think about it, I think I am guilty of overcalling. And, you know, when I'm hearing that Tom, the excitement kicks in. And I think I get a little heavy on the call. I'm like, okay, come in. You know, I know you're out there now. But I mean, I was just told the other night, call only once every 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right?
It kind of depends.
Mm-hmm.
Each time it's going to be a little different. And that's where I say you're going to learn from each experience. I was in the same situation as you. I was in a hunting blind and I was calling and calling, and I got so impatient. I knew he was right there, but he wasn't, I couldn't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And other people happened to be in the area and were actually watching me or watching the blind, because they knew they could see where the Tom was, and he was actually standing behind the blind. So that was the only window that I had closed in the blind. And I called just one more time so softly, and he just turned around and walked away because he knew that I was right there.
Yeah. So they don't necessarily want to know that you're that close to them. You shouldn't be calling once you have them in sight.
If you if you have a bird and you see him and he's within 50 yards, you certainly don't want to be calling. You just want to hopefully be patient, have him come a little closer, because the chance of you moving, let's say, unless you're using something like a mouth call, then you could do a little purr. Purrs are what I use when they're really close and I just want them to come 10 more yards. I might do a real light purr. But otherwise, the movement of your hand or not being on your gun and having yourself prepared to take the shot, that's more important than trying to quick do another call.
Right. So last spring, I heard a hen and I just started mimicking her because I had been out there a couple hours. Mm-hmm. I was actually ready to turn back and I started mimicking her. We were going back and forth pretty quickly. You know, there mm-hmm. was like, I don't know.
And that's a good technique because many times the toms are traveling with the hen mm-hmm. and she'll talk more than he will. And all of a sudden, you know, you might call that hen in and she might come check you out. And sure enough, there in the distance, you might see a fan. You know, he's just out there hanging. And I guess they call him sometimes boss hens for a reason, is because where she tells him he's going to go, that's where he's going to go. You know, she's kind of got him on a string. So yeah. If you can call that hen in, chances are he'll come along.
Okay. That's good to know. I definitely wasn't looking for him in the background. I just thought, oh, I just pulled her off because she came in real hot. she was ready to brawl.
And I've had times when, you know, I've had a hen come in and she goes back into the woods and I can still hear the gobblers back in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, this is over. She came out here and nothing happened, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you sit and you be patient, which is hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, that's so me.
We've had it where the hen will go back in and sure enough, maybe it's a half hour, 20 minutes later. And all of a sudden they come in quiet and they just pop out. So.
Yeah. It's patience is kind of the strategy to the game, isn't it?
Well, it is.
I think that's why I'm not very good at it.
Well,
I'm fishing or turkey hunting.
I'm not a real patient person either. Mm-hmm. It's common for me to probably go out in the morning and if I don't have a bird working in the first hour and a half, I'm probably going somewhere else and then I'll come back to the spot later in the day. You know, so I'm not one who's going to normally sit on a property for the day. That's just a little too boring. I like the exercise aspect of it.
Right.
I like walking. I like a little physical challenge.
So you're going, give me the visual here. You're walking through the woods, doing random calls just to see if you hear anything in the distance. You're not just going somewhere, setting up and hoping to bring something in.
No, I prefer to, it depends. There's some of our properties that we hunt, which are really heavily wooded or thick with briars and it's hard to get through. Mm-hmm. Some of those places we might have a blind that we'll use only because there really aren't trees that you can set up by where you'll have up to a 40 yard shot. So that in that case, I might use a blind, but otherwise let's say I was going to hunt a 50 acre parcel of just woods. And around that 50 acres is more woods. I probably will walk the kind of the perimeter. And this I'm saying is private land. Mm-hmm. So I know that I'm the only person on our private land, or I should be. And I'll probably walk like the perimeter of that. So I'm calling and walking maybe 50 to 100 yards, call again. If I hear something, I'll move towards that, cut the distance in half. And that way I'm hunting that 50 acres plus my neighbor's property, because your calls are calling further out. Plus, if I went right into the middle of mine, I might be busting something out. So I like to kind of go around the perimeter a little bit.
Okay. And what about, I mean, even with that, are you looking in a wooded area? Are you looking for some clearing as a more ideal place to be set up?
Well,
or around egg land?
Egg land is great, especially if there's, you know, corn or feed there. It's illegal to bait in Wisconsin. So I know some other states, it's okay for you to have feed out. But here, we have woodland that's pretty open, and we also have, you know, rolling meadows. And so it really depends on what type of area you're in. And that you can learn a little bit by your scouting. So as you're scouting, you're kind of going, okay, this is a good area that I'd set up with, because I have good visibility. If I sit down, you know, you can easily see in the distance. You just don't want to, you know, be able to go in and go, oh gosh, I hear him and he's close. And then you're in an area that you almost have to stand up. So I think that you're going to learn with your pre-scouting, knowing your land that you're going into, as far as what area you're going to target.
Okay. What about your hunting apparel? What do you like to use the most, the best gear and clothing wise?
Yeah. I would say anything that is full camo. And when I say full camo, I mean a hat and a mask that goes up over your nose, covers your face, gloves, camo gloves. Camo should kind of be head to toe. It doesn't have to match. You can have one pattern on your top and a different pattern on your bottom. And as long as it somewhat suits your environment, if you're just starting out, go to a resale store and pick up something cheap and use it and try it. You don't have to invest in the latest camo that's out there to get started. I like to use a turkey vest where I carry my equipment in. So I have there's little pockets for my slate call, my box call. What's nice is it's got a pouch in the back that I can put my turkey in when I harvest it. It's usually got orange on it, so I can take that orange out, and that's a safety thing. You'd really, you know, if you're thinking about it and you're carrying this turkey out and somebody happens to see the head waving for some reason and think, oh my gosh, that's a turkey. You want to make sure that that bird is either in an orange bag or hidden in your vest to make sure that you're safe there. I'll usually always make sure that I have a seat cushion, because in the morning it can be damp on the ground and nothing worse than having a wet seat all day. And then, you know, all the special things like a snack and toilet paper and the things that you have to have with you.
Yes. Yeah. What about, are you doing any face paint? I know some people do. And
you can. Yeah. I mean, if you'd rather use face paint than a mask. You certainly can. I just don't like it. It feels kind of sticky to me.
Right.
Plus, you know, when you're driving around in the car, people kind of look at you funny.
And I think we all have a plethora of masks right now.
I like the kind of mask that you can bring down and leave it around your neck versus the ones that are like glued to your hat.
Sure. Like the gaiters that you can pull up.
Because that way you can just pull it up and you don't have to keep it on all the time.
Right. Right. What about turkey recipes? I'm sure you have some good ones for that. What's your favorite?
I'd say the favorite thing is the fresh turkey, right? So you breast that turkey out. And maybe I'll take my breast and I'll either slice it into strips or I'll put it into nuggets, you know, inch and a half chunks, and marinate it in whatever your favorite marinade might be. And then I just, my favorite is putting it on the grill. After it's marinated, put it on with some fresh vegetables. And you really can't beat that.
Oh, your Annie Oakley Award. We missed that. I want to hear about that. What's the Annie Oakley Award?
So that, in 2014, I was nominated by people on our 3-day event committee to the National Wild Turkey Federation as a volunteer, like Volunteer of the Year Award. Okay. And they call it an Annie Oakley Award. So I was honored to be nominated by the people on my committee. And that year I was fortunate enough to win that, which I accepted at the national convention for my work with the Women in the Outdoors. I was the event coordinator for quite a few years, and I've been heavily involved in that for, like I said, 20 plus years. And it's really been a really great experience for me. It's allowed me to grow as a woman and kind of make an impact in the, what do I want to call it?
Like the outdoors.
Yeah. You know, because if you think about it, you know, by mentoring people, you know, I'm making a small impact. If I mentor one or two people a year, and those people go and end up hunting and mentoring other people, it's kind of the ripple effect. I think we as outdoors people or hunters need to pass that heritage on to the next generation, and also help people understand that just because you're a gun owner doesn't mean that you're a bad person. We're trying to help that balance with the conservation and harvest those animals for food. It's really important for us to all work together. If each of us took the time to educate someone, even if it's on gun safety, you know, I'd love to see gun safety in our schools. Mm-hmm. Just because too many accidents happen for children who might not know how to properly handle a weapon. I would much rather have my children know how to handle a weapon or to identify that somebody who doesn't know how, what is an unsafe behavior. If we all did just a little, if we all did just a little bit more to help people understand that, hunting is important, as well as conservation, that we can be the people of the change.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think you're making a lot bigger impact than you realize. You know, you said a couple hunters, but I mean, you have 180 women coming through this event that you're helping organize every year. That's huge. Right. And for them, 180 a year to share that with somebody or bring back a new person that following year, that's big. You're doing, I think you're making a much bigger impact than you're giving yourself credit for.
Well, we hope that that's what's happening. You know, we don't have all the statistics, but you know, it's important whether you're a National Wild Turkey Federation person or a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or part of the NRA, support those groups. You know, it could be Ducks Unlimited, you know, support the organizations that are out there, because they really are what we need.
Absolutely. Yep. If you're hunting them, support the organizations that are in all the education and habitat work to provide those opportunities for us to be out there and do it.
I just encourage anybody who's interested to go ahead, go online, go to the National Wild Turkey Federation website. And if they go to events, they can search by their state and see what's out there in their area that is either a banquet or a women's event or a youth event, a Jake's event, or a wheeling sportsman. They're all listed there. Get a hold of some of the people. There's phone numbers there that you can contact. There's so many volunteers that are working to help the Federation become stronger and do these outreach events that they're very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how can we find more information about your 3-day event in Wisconsin?
Yeah, you could actually find out our actual flyer or brochure for this year probably won't be posted until I'm thinking May or June this year, a little bit later, just because of COVID. I think we're making sure that that we set the amount of people according to what our state guidelines are. Mm-hmm. So I think our registration is going to be a little bit later this year, but you can find that, we'll be able to find that right at the NWTF website under events. Okay. Search for Wisconsin and you'll be able to find it there. Okay. Or people can reach out to me using my WITOLinda@gmail.com. And there's mm-hmm. also, if your followers look at Facebook, just look for Wisconsin Women in the Outdoors. We do have a Facebook page.
Perfect. And I'll put all that stuff in the show notes as well. So people can just click on it and be routed directly to those.
Great.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Linda. I hope you get yourself a well-earned and well-deserved Big Tom this year, this spring.
Well, I've never hunted out in Montana, so maybe yeah. the time will come when we can hunt together.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've always been solo. So if you can come bring some of your knowledge and your amazing calling experience, I'm all for that. You are welcome anytime.
That would be super fun. And then we could, we could meet up to go pheasant hunting somewhere.
Oh yeah. Yes, absolutely. Bring your short hairs out. They are yeah. welcome.
It was great. It was great talking to you.
You as well. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Courtney.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. Please help me out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from and hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.